Welcome to Computing Lives. You are listening to the second part of a four-part podcast on the life of Douglas Engelbart. This podcast is called Support from ARPA. Once Engelbart's theoretical framework was completed, the next step was to get funding to build and test a working model. Engelbart first gained support from JCR Licklider at the Advanced Research Projects Agency, and later from NASA. Licklider, a psychology professor and researcher at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, shared Engelbart's vision of interactive computing. In 1960, he had written a paper called Man-Computer Symbiosis. In this paper, Licklider asserted that a new relationship between humans and computers was necessary. Others have described this vision as follows. The single most important idea in Licklider's paper was to advocate the use of computers to augment the human intellect. This was a radical viewpoint at the time, and to a degree at odds with the prevailing view of the computer establishment, particularly artificial intelligence. Many computer scientists were caught up by the dream that artificial intelligence would soon rival the human intellect in areas such as problem solving, pattern recognition, and chess playing. Soon, they believed, a researcher would be able to assign high-level tasks to a computer. Licklider believed that such views were utopian. He argued that computer scientists should develop systems that enabled people to use computers to enhance their everyday work. He believed that a researcher typically spent only 15% of his or her time thinking. The rest of the time was spent up looking up facts in reference books, plotting graphs, doing calculations, so on. It was these low-level tasks that he wanted computers to automate instead of pursuing a high-flown version of artificial intelligence. Licklider, in 1962, became the first head of ARPA's newly established Information Processing Technologies Office, IPTO. IPTO's objective was to invest in research projects that would provide more capable, flexible, intelligent, and interactive computer systems. Licklider's interests in the human factors aspects in complex human-human and human-machine systems made him the ideal director of IPTO. Licklider had come to IPTO in 1962 with a vision of how to increase human-computer interaction and establish a program of breadth and depth to realize this vision. His successors all subscribed to this vision and continued to promote it. Licklider moved quickly to get funding for Engelbart's project. By early 1963, funding was approved and Licklider requested that the project be connected to the Systems Development Corporation computer in Santa Monica, California. SDC was developing a time-sharing system for one of its computers, which later that year it was able to connect with an online data link between Menlo Park, California, which was SRI, and Santa Monica. Although the funding that Licklider provided was a start, the project needed more and more money to develop interactive systems. Suddenly, an offer for support came from Bob Taylor, who was working at NASA headquarters. Months earlier, Engelbart had visited Taylor and left behind a copy of his framework report and proposal. After reading the report, Taylor had actively gone out seeking funds for him. The combined ARPA and NASA backing was enough to begin developing a working model. With this money, Engelbart set up the Augmentation Research Center, a unit that he called ARC, and this was located at SRI. The goal of this research was directly oriented towards augmenting the capability of humans to deal with tough knowledge work. Engelbart's team wanted to invent new methods to process effectively the large volumes of information that knowledge workers use. The management professor, Peter Drucker, had coined the term knowledge workers. Drucker defined knowledge as the systematic organization of information. Knowledge workers were people who create and apply knowledge to productive goals. In the late 1960s, Drucker's The Age of Discontinuity predicted that a social transformation would occur in the last quarter of the 20th century. the U.S. economy would shift from an economy that manufactured products to one that was primarily based on the exchange of knowledge. Engelbart's primary research goal was to invent technologies that would support the knowledge worker. A secondary goal of the augmentation research was to develop computer systems that support active collaboration among groups of knowledge workers. This aspect of Engelbart's research has become the discipline of computer-supported cooperative work. His augmentation system was the first major research work done in office automation and text processing. In fact, the entire augmentation project was much more ambitious and broad in scope than the current office productivity tools we use in professional work environment of the 1990s. The system that Engelbart developed was called the NLS, for Online System, and in this case the initial O was dropped. It included such advanced features as electronic mail, computer conferencing, multiple windows on a screen, and a mouse. The NLS was designed to enable any team member to read material written by anyone else working on the project and to make comments on the documents. Electronic documents could be accessed from any terminal connected to the augmentation system. Documents were shared and distributed among members of the group during the development process. This project was the first prototype of a paperless office. No paper changed hands during the communication exchange, and access to information was perceptually immediate. The ability to create, to share, and to store documents was achieved by connecting the text editing system with a special kind of electronic filing organization system that would serve as a combined memory, record, and medium for unifying individual research efforts. A software journal was established for individuals and groups to have access to shared electronic space for thinking and communicating. This journal, this electronic unit, enabled individuals to insert comments into the group record of augmentation experiments or to browse through them. Moreover, the augmentation system allowed programmers to trace the way system features had developed and evolved. Engelbart and his team designed unique methods for interacting with the system. In addition to a traditional keyboard, the user could input commands with a 5-key, 1-hand chord key set. Simple one-character commands were input through the chord, for example, I, insert, D, delete, and M, move or rearrange. After the command is typed, the user points with the mouse to tell the system where in the screen the command should be executed. Engelbart's mouse was a box with hidden wheels underneath. Ted Nelson described the working of the mouse as follows. The Engelbart mouse is a little box with hidden wheels underneath and a cable to a terminal. As you roll it, the wheels' turns are signaled to the computer, and the computer moves the cursor on the screen. It's fast and accurate, and in fact, it beats a light pen hands down in working speed. In tests, the mouse outperformed the light pen and joystick in placing the cursor in random screen positions. Engelbart stated, "The actual invention of the mouse was the result of analyzing the various characteristics of other pinpointing input devices. In addition to handheld devices, they experimented with knee and head cursor controls, but muscles would cramp. As a result, they stayed with the mouse." You've been listening to Computing Lives. This is the second part of a 4-part podcast on Douglas Engelbart. It's based on an essay that was written by Susan Barnes and appeared in Volume 19, Number 3 of the Annals. More about the Annals and other publications of the Computer Society can be found at www.computer.org. To find the Annals, click on the Publications tab and go to Technical Magazines. Other Computer Society podcasts can be found at www.computer.org/podcasts. If you have any comments, please send them to podcasts@computer.org. The music for this podcast came from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network, which you can find at music.podshow.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time.